Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Dave Tree.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 17 of Making Tracks. I'm your host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today, as always, it's the man. Listen to Twitter. Other people calling themselves the man. They're not. This is the man. I'm going to hand over to the man. The man, please tell us who you are and what you're doing.
The man.
Yeah.
Hi everyone, it's Dave. You saying that though, we're going on a tangent already. Literally finished watching Final Space. Have you seen that?
I haven't.
Oh, it's amazing. It's an animated feature and it's got Ron Perlman in it, Stephen Young and David Tennant. It's really, really funny. But in that, the main character in it is called Gary. But when he meets face to face with like the ultimate evil villain, he's called the Gary. And then from that point onwards, every time the villain sees him, he calls him, "It's the Gary." Like this, he's like, "No, it's just Gary." Like that. So he's saying the man. It instantly gave me flashbacks of that.
That sounds good. I will look out for the Gary and Final Space. Dave, you've done a vague introduction, but explain to people who are not listening before, because I just have a feeling this episode is going to have loads of new listeners. I don't know why. Explain to people who you are and what you do.
Hello, everyone. My name's Dave, and I run a toy shop called All the Cool Stuff, which you can find down in the deepest, darkest depths of Hampshire. I am the co-host on Making Tracks.
We've got loads going on in this episode, actually, by the way. We've got Ross Sandwich from a little show called Fibers From, which is kind of fun. So 16 minutes of me talking to Ross about Star Wars and stuff. And we're going to talk about all sorts of other things that's going on. Capital Sci-Fi, which is only a couple of weeks away. I'm at the Sci-Fi Ball. We'll talk a little bit about that. We've got Celebration Chicago coming up. Got loads to talk about that. You were at UK Toy Fair very recently. There's all sorts of stuff. What should we talk about first, Dave? Because I am so ill-prepared, I don't even know what to kick off with.
The UK Toy Fair is every January. It allows the trade to kind of get an idea of what's coming up in the world of like toy retail and collectibles and things like that. It's a little bit early to say that you've got episode 9 stuff on display. That's not really how it works. It kind of will give you an indication that there will be stuff there, but they don't sort of show you product or anything like that. And for the most part, because we're still all under confidentiality agreements from the point of view that nobody knows the name, you know, the characters and things like that. They say that there'll be stuff related to episode 9, but not really actually saying anything at all. It's more a case of showing existing products. So you've got the likes of distributors for Hasbro there, Lego, and then distributors for other licenses like Sideshow and Hot Toys. So they kind of have all the really cool models on display. And Revell.
I'm very fond of Revell. I think one of the highest viewed videos we ever had on Fantatracks TV was an empty Revell box, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit anticlimactic. But no, people sometimes associate the toy fair as a Willy Wonka kind of style experience. And it's not really. It's quite, you know, it's a little bit too early to really see things.
Yeah.
You got New York Toy Fair, which you guys are popping up to next month. No, this month, isn't it?
Yeah, Mr. Booker's going, yeah.
A New York Toy Fair is actually the more exciting one. You've got Nuremberg, which is like sort of the one in between London and New York. But New York is the one where you get all the press and all the really big reveals. So London kind of holds back on stuff because the Big Bang is really the New York Toy Fair. So there wasn't really a lot to sort of report from London Toy Fair other than kind of seeing what's, you know, in general, what the kind of mood for UK toy retail is headed at.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting because this is the first one that really kind of is post closure of Toys R Us for the UK market. And whilst as an independent toy shop, you'd think, well, does that mean that there's a refocus from a lot of the companies? Because they've all lost, really, genuinely, what is one of their biggest clients. So do they kind of like look at, well, look, what's out there? Do we look to work with those guys even closer? Because we're losing not just like one of our biggest customers, but we've also lost marketing muscle because the points of presence of our product being out there has diminished with the loss of Toys R Us. A lot of people don't realize that by physically having stuff in stores is marketing in its own right. You know, if you're seeing those things or being exposed to them, you're much more likely to build up brand recognition and, you know, hopefully sales as a result of them just physically being out there. And what was very interesting to me as someone who is somewhat embroiled in all of this is that there was a big focus and shift towards trying to claim back the teenage market. For quite some time, there's been a reduction in that side of things because of the acknowledgement of kids grow up faster, that, you know, they don't play with toys for the sort of same amount of time that they traditionally would do because they're moving into products like phones and tablets and things like that. You know, they're becoming much more technology conscious, and as a result, that's what they want. But there was certainly a huge uptake in licensing from gaming based properties, so like Fortnite in particular, but Overwatch, Five Nights at Freddy's, those sorts of things. You saw a lot more addressing of collectibles in that sense. And then you've got things like Funko Pops, you know, that they arguably like led the way on that front by like trying to hooking the teenage market so that it's not seen as a toy, but you like Fortnite, you like gaming, you know, Minecraft and so on and so forth. Why not get this and put it on your bookshelf? It's still a toy, but you don't market it as a toy. And you could see that a lot of other companies were kind of thinking along those lines, which is really good because it's trying to fight back and think outside of the box rather than just like I go, well, we'll only make stuff up to people of 9 years of age because after then they're not interested.
No.
So that was quite interesting, really.
So you had a wonderful time. You had an enjoyable walk.
Yeah, you do a lot of walking.
You do a lot of walking at these things.
and you do a lot of talking. And then you pay exorbitant prices for just like getting a bottle of Nestle Stillwife Pure Life water. Best. But no, it's quite good. But really, if you're holding out for all the big kind of Hasbro reveals and Lego reveals, you will certainly get those, but it will be from the New York Toy Fair.
Yeah.
Because that's traditionally when you sort of see all the big exciting stuff. I don't think you quite see anything Episode 9 related just yet, because there isn't anything Episode 9 related quite out there. You know, we just had the Super Bowl, and I know some people were kind of like anticipating that there'd be some kind of hint or reveal or something like that. No.
I think my gut tells me they're keeping their powder dry for Celebration now. I don't think you might. I mean, Lucasfilm have this habit of two things. One, just kind of quietly putting all these things out and letting Twitter explode on its own. And two, putting two announcements out in one press release. Like, oh, Disney's just bought Lucasfilm and we're making three new films. They seem to have a habit of sort of putting the other piece in the second paragraph. So I think we might, you know, we might get an announcement of there's a new trailer today and the film is called this. But hopefully they'll save it for Celebration, despite Solo hitting a bit of a hiccup at the box office and the marketing being awful, sadly, for such a good film. You know, I think they'll be all where they should be with Episode 9. I think that'll roll pretty good. So, yeah, New York's coming up. Matt's going over to that one, so we'll have plenty of coverage coming at the site and all the social media. And hopefully he'll be recording some audio, so we'll have some stuff for the future podcasts. And speaking of future podcasts, we're doing other shows as well on the network, as well as what Adam's doing with Panther Down Under. There's new shows coming, so we'll be announcing those fairly soon. Some of them will actually be launching at Celebration, which is only about 65 days away, which is kind of scary.
Oh my word.
I know. Yes,
slightly. Well, very, very scary.
Well, are you ready yet? Have you packed your bags yet, Dave? I mean, you're coming. Since the last show, it's been decided, you know, we've got Dave coming. So where are you at your packing process?
The Dave is coming.
The Dave is coming.
I'll be honest, I have not even given it a second thought, but I probably need to. I mean, that's a lie. I've been giving it thoughts in other areas, but in terms of on a personal level, I haven't given it any kind of thought at all. I mean, this is my first non-European Celebration.
Yeah.
This will be quite cool to come over to the States.
To watch you get frisked at the airport and then deported. That's what I'm looking forward to. That's my personal buzz.
Well, this is another story for another time, but I am on a list of sorts when it comes to US immigration.
You are a sort. There's no doubt about that.
That is a very different story. But so this will be, I mean, I used to do the G.I. Joe con on a regular basis, so I was very fortunate to be able to participate in those shows for a number of years, so that was quite exciting. But I've never done a US celebration, which is a whole different kettle of fish.
It is.
In terms of size and scale. So, yeah, really, really looking forward to that.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
So your predictions are going to be that it's going to be both a name and a trailer then? Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I mean, they've got this huge arena that I'm being told holds something crazy like 10,000 people or something stupid like that. So I think capacity is not an issue. It's in Chicago, which two things. One is where Harrison Ford was born, and two, it's where George Lucas lives. So I've got a feeling that they could be both involved to some degree. I don't know what it'll be. I just have a sneaky suspicion because it's Chicago and it's outside of the Anaheim, Orlando, London sort of circuit that they might try and do something different. They don't need to build buzz for episode 9 because everybody knows it's coming. But then again, nobody knew Solo was coming. You know, they can't be too cocky and they can't assume too much of the audience. So I think they're going to need to hit pretty early on in the convention some big news. But we're there in strength. We've got lots of Fanthas going. We've got our own booth 1248, if I remember from memory, right near the Rebel Legion 501st and near the store, the celebration store. So we're in a really good spot. Lots of footfall. People will see what we're doing. I think we're even going to be preparing our booth, aren't we, at the weekend, trying to lay it all out and make sure it works.
Now you're just literally letting the cat out of the bag.
I have. The cat has gone. The cat just ran.
We're going to be holding the booth there, and I'm quite excited because it's something that we're theming it of sorts.
We are.
So you'll be able to come and see us on a daily basis, and effectively I'll be manning the booth.
Daving the booth. You'll be daving the booth.
Daving the booth, and there'll be a premium of sorts to come and collect on a daily basis. And then also there'll be content, and we'll also have a few special friends of the show and associates that will be utilizing the booth,
yes,
to be able to kind of like say hello to people as well. So really looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be awesome. And another thing, before we launch into our Ross Sandwich interview, we are also involved in the podcast stage. I'm helping to organize it. I'm a stage host, so that's going to be awesome, and I'm looking forward to it. But also, it now means, because you're there, Dave, we can do Making Tracks Live at Star Wars Celebration, and I am already speaking to people about coming on as special secret guests. I will tell you quietly once we're off air, but we're going to have a couple of really cool guests come on, so that's going to be awesome. You and me live.
For the record of anybody listening to this, this is the first that Mark has actually mentioned this to me.
Mm-hmm, this is all new.
Martin mentioned it to me, and I said to Martin, well, Mark's not said anything to me about this. This is, so I suppose this is you officially saying that we're going to be doing something.
Mm-hmm. I just like the sense of shock that emanates across the airways. That's why I do it. It's for the endorphins. Yeah. It's not because I'm being sneaky or I just forget stuff. It's because I'm
trying reckless.
I'm trying to get a hit. That's what it is.
Well, I mean, that would be quite cool. I mean, it'd be nice if someone turns up to listen to or to see Making Tracks on the podcast stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, if failing that, come to the Fantha Tracks booth.
Yes.
Probably be recording bits and segments there as well at the same time.
I don't want to entice people like false advertising, but do you remember the episode of Oprah when everybody put their hands under the seat and there was a keys for a car? That's all I'm saying. Just turn up. It'll be worth your while. Definitely worth your while.
It's Tuesday night. Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. Welcome to Making Tracks.
So Chicago's going to be nuts. We're going to make sure we have loads of fun. There's loads of people we're going to see that we haven't seen for ages, and it's going to be awesome. But Chicago is still 65 days away as we speak today. We've got other stuff before then. We've got Capital Sci-Fi up in Edinburgh, which I am travelling up to with Mr. Keeler, Martin Keeler. We're going to record loads of stuff. I'm a stage host for that show as well, so I'm going to be interviewing a lot of the guests. And Dave, read out the list of guests as we speak so far that have been announced. We've got Angus McInnes coming on the Friday. DJ Elliott is travelling over, Celebration staple as well. Nick Brokenshire from Blues Harvest is going to be there, and he is signing as well. Jimmy V, Annabelle Davis, that's Warwick's daughter, Mike Quinn. Warwick Davis is there, Jerome Blake, Chris Parsons. I'm doing all this from memory, it's amazing. Kieran Shaw, Katie Cartwheel, oh yeah, Aidan Cook.
Woo!
And Lewis McLeod. Suburba's going to be there. How awesome is that? And so I'm really looking forward to that. I've never
all from memory.
All from memory, dude. I'm like a machine. And I'm going to be a stage host for that as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Woo! Very much. And Andy Lith, one of our newer Fantha Tracks members, he has just been announced today as the second host. Going to be really awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Let's go back right now to farthest from. This is me sitting down with Ross Sandwich, our big guest at the show. Ross was in Solo, A Star Wars Story. He played a Wookiee. He was in The Last Jedi. He was a body double for Snoke. You actually see him on screen in certain sequences. He played a very small role in the film called Breathe, directed by Andy Serkis, starring Andrew Garfield and Claire Foy, that me and Ruth watched at the weekend. An absolutely lovely film. And he was in that very briefly as a German desk clerk at a hospital. So it was a really good film. So catch that if you can. Here's me and Ross talking before I run out of breath.
So we move on to the next section of the evening, which is kind of like the Q&A round. So we're going to start off with Mark Newbold, who is the main man from Making Tracks, the podcast from Fantha Tracks Produce. He's going to be interviewed, just doing a short Q&A with Ross Ambridge, who's one of our guests. If you're not familiar with Ross, this will be a nice little introduction to the work that he's done recently with The Last Jedi and Solo, A Star Wars Story. And then we're going to do a Q&A with Gus. And probably best to do the presentation and then finish with Blockbusters with Stuart and Jez. And Gus. So I'll hand you over to Mark, so thank you very much.
The main man on Making Tracks, really. Okay, I'm going to sit here because I'm feeling lazy and stuffed after my dinner. Ross, would you care to join me?
You get the coffee chair.
Right, we're going to share one microphone because that's how we roll. To see yourself immortalised in plastic, does that give you a bit of a buzz?
It's different. I don't really say it. Yes, it's
it's an honour in a way to see myself. I know that obviously Andy Serkis is, like everyone knows Andy Serkis as being Snoke, but he never actually wore the costume. Yeah. Therefore, when I was like scanned for the body shape, they said that, yeah, she'll be made into some sort of like merchandise. We don't know what exactly yet. Yeah, so to see myself in that position where I had to, did actually, just to do that with my arm, and I didn't know what it was for, and then it was just for that. And I was working for Toys R Us at the time when it came out.
Okay.
So just to put myself on the shelf, which was quite surreal. So it's, I was like, wow. And then the Black Series figures came out, and I noticed that they've actually included the curvature that I've got a slight curvature of the spine, and they've added that onto all the toys.
Yeah.
So that's a lovely thing to have. And that came about because when I was on the set, the AD went over to Ryan Johnson and said, do you know, Ross has got a slight curvature, does that matter? And Ryan said, oh, well, we'll just keep Snoke a curvature. So he wasn't going to have a curvature originally.
Yeah.
And it added to it some sort of like creepy, sort of looming over, sort of pulling apart sort of state it was in. So great, great for people that do have a bit of a back problem. You know, you can still kind of, it adds to the whole effect of that character.
Well, because you were in Last Jedi, you're also in Solo. So in Last Jedi, obviously, you're playing a character that's got CG elements added to it.
Yeah.
In Solo, you're in a costume. So what for you was the most, what was the most challenging, and two, what was the most interesting of the two roles to do?
Well, for Jedi, working with Andy to make sure that our emotions were pretty much the same.
Yeah.
So they could layer the CGI head and hands on there. It all had to marry up. So that was kind of challenging. We went through different versions of how he would walk, how he would come across on the screen. So I had a bit of freedom to try and manipulate some of the movements. So he did originally walk a little bit different from what you on the screen. So it was Andy's inspiration for the motion capture world, and sort of like to share that experience with him was fantastic. So yes, that was challenging in that way. But on Solo, it's a whole different kettle of fish, because you have to sort of be from being evil and menacing and creepy to going to be like sort of like a hero, what, hero-ish creature that sort of like is your escape. You're having a slave where you've been beaten and whipped, and you're near enough going to be carking it. And then is that word?
It is now.
and you put all this fur on. Now originally I was up to play Sagwa,
right.
So my fur was made the same way as Chewbacca's fur was, all the yak hair. And the other guys were made out of synthetic hair. And then when there was a change of directorship, should we say, Ron saw Attila, who plays Sagwa now, like just practicing his moves, and said, oh, he should be Sagwa. So, which is fine. I think to be honest, Attila did a fantastic job at Sagwa, so it's all cool. But there was no time to change his costume from being synthetic, so he was like burning up in the set and melting, and I was like to tip his head off, and it was like, oh, look at this, where they took his head off, it was like a swimming pool. So it was hot in the suits, but it was just the fact is it was all swept up in what we were doing. And like we just, like myself, Paul Davis, who plays the drill rookie, and Matt Tyler, was all just giggling away like school kids, because we was like running around next to the Millennium Dome. Millennium Dome? Millennium Falcon, sorry.
That would have been interesting.
I had a drink. Millennium Dome. And it was so fun. And we just obviously like tried touching the Falcon takes. And it was really, really, really brilliantly fun. And we had to keep pinching each other, like going like, you know, are we really doing this? And when I was growing up, I always wanted to go into acting, and the two friends that were either Star Wars or Bond. And so now to realise a dream, it is literally a dream.
Hi, this is Gareth Edwards, director of the best standalone Star Wars film since Caravan of Courage, called Rogue One. You're listening to Panther Tracks. Enjoy.
And so, of course, you've done the two films. Being on the solo sets then, that was more, I'm assuming, I might be wrong, I'm assuming that with the Last Jedi set, it was there a lot of blue screen? Was it green screen? How was that laid out?
What you see on screen of the red, it's all there. That's nothing to see. There's no computer added there. And it was all in one big studio, and you could probably fit this hall about 8 or 9 times in the size of it. And it's a great, huge building, but we didn't see much of the outside.
No.
But and then on our scenes on Solo, the tunnels were shot in one studio.
Yes.
And then the mines themselves were outside on another part of the studio. And yeah, it was just so expansive. And even though the outside parts all in green screen,
yeah,
you still had to like say, well, you have to run over there, and that's where like where a ship's going to be. So if you to get escape and stuff, so we go, well, we don't actually. There's no that doesn't exist. So we just have to keep running to where there's like an assistant going. There's a holy up little stick going. Okay, it's here. Don't run anywhere else. Don't fall inside the steam pits.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So. Because they were also, that was quite hard to run out the tunnels.
Yeah.
And then coming to this massive sort of like fight sequence going on.
Yeah.
And all the steam from the steam pits all in our faces. So we couldn't quite tell where we're going. So there was a couple of times where we are almost running into the human slaves and things.
Yeah.
And they always kind of get in the way, yeah. You know. So we had to try and pace ourselves in doing it. And the stunt coordinators were going, well, you've got to stand here, and they suppose we're going to move over here because obviously you're taller and bigger, and therefore your feet are much more.
Yeah.
You're going to bump into them. And some of the human slaves would kind of stop accidentally, and we just career into them. I don't think all of them survived in the end.
You think they went down?
They went down and trampled on and run over and everything like that.
What did he prefer then? Did he prefer the stillness of Snoke, or did he prefer the motion of the Wookiee character?
I like them both. They're both completely different from each other, because obviously with the atmospheric part of Snoke, you still get a lot of motion throughout no motion.
Yeah.
It's all sort of like in the audience like feels. That's hence. It's like a bit like the alien film Aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's where it's still very atmospheric and very sort of dark.
Suspenseful, yeah.
Yeah. And then where you've got like the solo parts, more action to it.
Yeah.
But it's I like them both. It's crazy and fantastic to be sort of like sitting here after doing it and like talking about it. It's still fresh, even though.
Yeah,
Jedi was 2.5 years ago,
yeah.
And Solo was 15 months ago, and it's just still there. All like yesterday.
Yeah. And you were pleased with how both films came out. You enjoyed them very much.
I mean, obviously, I know there's a slight variation between the cinema release and DVD Blu-ray version of Solo, where you don't get to see much Wookiee action on the cinema release, but then. On the Blu-ray, you do see a heck of a lot more Wookiee action. Maybe it's just the fact that they didn't want to take too much away from Chewbacca.
Yeah.
But, no, it was just cool. Here we go.
This is a Q&A, so if anybody has any questions, pop a hand up and we can always ask. I'm looking around. Matt, you mentioned about the toys, so what were you going to ask?
I was going to ask where you got your jumper.
My jumper? Well, I think I got it from, I think it was from Aldi.
Only it was Tesco, because every little helps.
Oh, that's what they say. It's not true, but that's what they say. So, when you auditioned for the roles, individually, when you went for the Snoke role, what was the proviso that you were auditioning on? What do you know what they were looking for when you went in?
No, I've said this a couple of times, but basically what it is my agent rang me up and said that there was a thing called Space Bear being filmed at Pinewood, and they said, would I be interested in coming down for the fitting? So I said, yeah, fine, sure, why not? So went down there, went through to the warehouse that had all like, the of the fitting engine, and there was C-3PO and R2-D2 sitting there, so I think this could be something to do with Star Wars. I'm not too sure. Went in the fitting room, and they said, can you just stand by this door here, we'll measure up, and there was all the measurements for Rogue One, and it had Boris Whitaker's measurement on there, so I'm going, okay, it still could be, I'm not going to attempt to play. And then they said, well, just put this gold robe on and stand on the stage, and the director will be in a second to look at it. And I'm going, fine, just put this on. And stood on the stage, and then Ryan Johnson walked in and said, oh, you must be our Snoke. So I said, I guess I must be. A little bit like what happened with Peter Mayhew as Chewie, yeah. And George Mayhew, oh, you must be our. But, and I still didn't really know who Ryan Johnson was at that point. Then they said, oh, he did Looper and Brick and things. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Within a month later, I was on the set. As I was like, sitting on the throne, I'm going, I'm on the Star Wars. I just can't believe it. And then you see Andy come on with his motion capture suit on, and there you are, really.
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
What was the collaboration between you and Andy like? Because obviously, not knowing the guy personally, but understanding that he's a very collaborative guy, he's got to be to do what he does to the level that he does it. How did you two make that work? Because like you say, you've got to mimic to a degree what he's doing, but he's got to kind of jive with you as well. How did he make it work?
Well, firstly, he's very much down to earth. He was, in a way, he was a little bit in awe of my height and things. It was like, we're so glad that we've got someone to actually fit the shape and size of Snow. And then it was just a case where it was like he would do one movement, and he said, "Well, just try moving like a saunter in a way, but like being sort of bent over and try that way around." And then, so he did go through a couple of forms of I say movement.
Yeah.
Some of it was a bit too creepy for the camera. Sometimes it wasn't too. It wasn't as creepy as it should be. So we just had to just formulate a way of. And then when it came to sort of like doing the voice and such, even though he was the voice of Snoke, the way he spoke, I had to move in the way that he spoke. Because it's different. It's just how it's so creepy. You have to sort of like walk quite slowly. If you're not so creepy, you can walk a bit too quick for it.
Yeah.
So on the bit where Carlo's kneeling down and Snoke walks down the slope. You have to do it in such a way that it's not walking normally. You're sort of like to sort of walk slightly with your knees bent,
yeah.
Sort of like to get that sort of that slow sort of dank sort of,
yeah,
sort of,
yeah.
Creepy sort of,
yeah,
you know,
like proud, yeah, sort of,
yeah, pretty much, yeah. And that was fun. Yeah, that was fun. It was very slippery on that slope as well sometimes, yeah. So I nearly fell over. You know, a couple of times, but you know, when you're in like a multi-billion-pound production, you can't really do that a lot.
No, you don't want to fall
over. Don't.
How long were you filming for?
On Jedi, I was about just under 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was very good. It was like the first day on set. I had Daisy Ridley sit on my lap. So, you know, it was.
you win for the day.
it was pretty good. She went, I didn't think this was gonna happen on your first day. No, it was nice to meet you and that sort of stuff. And but I think because she was lovely as well.
Yeah,
I mean, the following days she was like, she would say, "Oh, hi Ross, how are you doing?" As well. I mean, it's quite nice the fact that she actually acknowledged my name and everything else. And double Gleason was lovely as well, and Driver was lovely. Very method, but he's a lovely guy. There was one other highlight on that set was when I was eating Eva lunch, and I just noticed this guy come out left eye, hands out of my eye, like that. And can't be, but I slowly started finishing Eva lunch and put my lunch down, and I was in the gold robe still, walked over and went, "Mr. Hamill, it's lovely to meet you, sir." And it was like, oh yeah, no, I don't often meet the bad guys. Yeah, it was all cool. And he was carrying his daughter's dog, Millie, in his hands.
Yeah.
But I went to try and shake his hand, but obviously he was carrying it. And it was just the fact that I didn't realise I was doing it at the time, but my hand just came out like all a bit creepy, like that. I started to just stroke the top of his hand like that. And it was like, I said to him, it's really lovely to meet you and work with you. I said, oh, that's cool. I said, you know, I've always been a fan of you, Mr. Hamill. I said, oh, call me Mark. Yeah. And it's like, Mark Hamill, so, you know. And then he said, so tell me, how do they see? And he talked about the Praetorian Guards.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it is. It's like some little grills just in their helmets, and they can just see through there. And my brain's now going, you're now explaining Star Wars to Luke Skywalker. So, he was a lovely guy, and he said, oh, well, I've got to go back onto set, but, you know, and then off he walked, and I was like,
so I just stroked my camera's dog, yeah.
Yeah. Which doesn't sound too good when you say that, yeah. But then I walked back, and then another guy came up to me and said, so who was that then? Who was that? Oh, you don't know your Star Wars, do you? Yeah. So that was really good. So those sort of things like do stick in my memory.
Yeah.
And I met Gary as well, Carrie Fisher's dog.
Yeah.
Didn't stroke him. One dog stroking is enough for one day.
Okay, so we've got the second part of the interview with Ross coming on the next episode. That'll be episode 18 of Making Tracks, your now favourite podcast. We had a competition on the site to win a copy of Star Wars Icons Solo, very kindly sent to us by Insight Books. The winner of that competition is... Dave, drum roll. You know what that sounds like? You see, that sounds like... the lamest electric drill or the worst Wookiee impression ever. I can't make out which one it is.
All right, hang on.
The winner of our solo book competition is Greg Salas. Greg, if you're listening to this show, we will be in touch. You've got to let us know that you've heard the episode. So if, Greg, you listen to the episode, that's the only way you're going to get your book. You've got to let us know you've listened to the episode, and then we will send it through the post. Very well done, and we'll have another competition up on site very soon.
Congrats, Greg. That is awesome.
Oh, no, sorry, the Greg.
The Greg.
It's a thing now. So, Dave, until we meet again for our next episode, what have you got planned? What have you got lined up? What's in the future for the Dave Tree?
The Dave. So, you briefly mentioned that in this weekend, a couple of us are meeting up to dress rehearse what we got going on with the Fan the Tracks celebration booth, go through and make sure that we've got bits and bobs all sorted out. Beyond that, until we talk again, I don't really think I've got anything else.
You're just winging it, man.
There is a lot coming up in March.
Yes.
But for February, I mean, there's Valentine's Day. I mean, you know, unless we're going to get together. I mean, are we talking before Valentine's Day, you know, for the Valentine's Day Bantha special?
I've got to say, and this is very awkward, I get the train to Capital Sci-Fi on the Thursday. That's Valentine's Day. So I tried to, at noon. So I tried to sweetly sort of say, oh, we can have a breakfast together and we could go out for breakfast. And then she says, no, I've got a doctor's appointment in the morning. It's all gone down the toilet. So I've made sure I bought her a really nice Valentine's present.
Mark.
Excuse me, it's the Mark, please.
The Mark.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ruth has the patience of Job and... There's no excuse.
I know.
But I don't really have anything else other than seeing you crazy folks. I mean, you've got the sci-fi ball this weekend.
Yes.
How many is that for you now?
That will be, hang on, that's a good question. This is the 25th one, so it's 25 years of the sci-fi ball. Yeah. It used to be the Star Trek ball or the Starfleet ball, and now it's the sci-fi ball, a bit more catch-all. And the guest that I am mainly going to see is Robert Duncan McNeil from Star Trek Voyager. That's the person I'm really going there to see. So I'm going to be covering that for my other website for Star Trek Neutral Zone. So I'm looking forward to that very much. Yeah, so that's this weekend. Yeah, so that'll be fun. Then we're going to stop at Friends in Verwood, which is just a bit northwest of you, I think. It's all fairly within the same area.
Southwest.
Is it Northwest? And now, but the ball used to be in Bournemouth, but now it's in Southampton. So it's a little jaunt across to Southampton. So hopefully there'll be some coverage of sorts on Fantha touching on that. But mostly that's for Neutral Zone. So February, it's nice and busy. There's loads going on. And March will be nuts, and then here we are. It's going to be Celebration Chicago, and we'll all be hopping on planes at various locations across the UK and probably getting stopped at customs.
I hope so.
Now, before we go, I'll just sense a frisking for somebody. I just don't know which one of us it's going to be. Before we go, Martin Keener is very, very organised because Brian's currently flying back from Las Vegas, so he's out of contact as we speak. I said to Martin, is there anything I need to talk about on this episode of the show? He goes, no, you and Dave, just do your thing. He says, but make sure you mention the social media. So I am going to mention that we can be found everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube channel, anywhere. It's at FanTheTrack.
So Tumblr.
So come along and find us. We are in all of these places. We love to talk to people. We like to interact. And the more people we interact, the better, because that's kind of how it works. And also on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, as it used to be, give us a 5-star review. If you think we're worth anything, if you're listening to this now, we've got to be worth a 5-star review. So give us a 5-star review. It really helps us out. Dave, until the next time, which won't be that long, where can people find you apart from your dungeon?
You can find me in the dungeon. You can find me in my little roller skate van, because I've got it back today after 5 months.
Really?
No idea how long that's taken. But it makes me happy. You can find me at All the Cool Stuff, which is the shop down in Fordham Ridge in Hampshire, but is also on social media as All the Cool Stuff. And as Mark mentioned, we have all the social medias. Now, there's things that I am also doing on the social media, which I haven't done before, which if you haven't partaken before, we would really appreciate if you did. Doing YouTube? No, we're doing Twitter and Facebook polls.
Yeah. Yes.
And they're not really that serious. It's just a nice, light-hearted opinion piece where you can just cast your vote. The current one we've got going, which comes to an end, is, for example, who would win in a dance-off between the Knights of Ren and Snoke's Praetorian Guards. And it's quite interesting where we have different audiences, because it's quite clear-cut on Facebook that the Knights of Ren is considered to be the ones who would win in a dance-off.
They're groovier.
There has been some great responses, in the sense of someone said that Snoke's Praetorians are dancing lobsters. Mm-hmm. They are more coordinated than the Knights of Ren. But on Twitter, it's actually more closer. It's 45% the Knights of Ren. Ooh. And 55% the Praetorian Guard. Praetorians are winning on Twitter versus on Facebook, where the Knights of Ren are winning. But yeah, we ask you to cast your vote there. We've also got the YouTube, so the FanTheTrax YouTube channel, and we are going great guns with the current video at the moment, which is talking about the 2019 Hasbro releases for the Vintage Collection and Black Series. If you haven't watched that yet, watch it. It's getting lots of views, and we would really appreciate you subscribing to the channel there. Yes. We have broken the 800 mark, so we are hurtling towards the next landmark. Well, the next landmark really is 1,000, yes. So that's yes. Where we'd like to get to. So if you could subscribe, that would be really appreciated there, if you don't already subscribe across all our other social media channels. But Mark, where in the world can I find you if I need to hunt you down?
If you need to hunt me down, I'm not telling you where I am. That would be crazy. But for the purposes of this conversation, you can find me on Twitter at prefect_timing. You can find me on Facebook under my own name. But usually you will find me on social media at FanTheTrax, basically sharing and retweeting and liking random bits of Star Wars related tat. If you have the itch to see something Star Trek related now that Discovery's back, you can also find me over at Star Trek The Neutral Zone. That's STTNZ at STTNZ, or Z, as we Brits would say properly, correctly, but we'd say TNZ because that's just how it sounds. And basically, randomly faffing about doing silly stuff. We've brought this episode to a wonderful close. I'm halfway through a bottle of very refreshing Nestle Still Life water. I know they're not as delicious anymore, but I just couldn't give up on that. That's smooth, silky...
Dagger through the heart.
I'm sorry. We need a new sponsor. You know, when we started the show and you went off on that tangent, I thought he's leading somewhere with this. There's a sponsorship deal going to be announced, but it just didn't happen. So we need a sponsor. Whoever's listening, get us a sponsor, for goodness sake.
Whoever's listening, just sponsor us.
Just randomly, just chuck us a fiver. That's all we are so cheap, it's ridiculous. Just anything.
Oh, lordy.
So that's it. We're out. Goodbye, Dave. See you for the next episode.
And goodbye, Mark. I'll see you on Saturday.
You will, baby.
Oh, yeah. The Dave is coming.
The Dave is coming. The Dave.